We're starting chapter 16 of Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, called The Goblet of Fire. "I don't believe it," said Ron in a stunned voice, as the Hogwarts students filed back up the steps behind the party from Durmstrang. "Crumb, Harry! Victor Crumb!" "For heaven's sake, Ron, he's only a Quidditch player," said Hermione. "Only a Quidditch player?" said Ron, looking at her as though he couldn't believe his ears. "Hermione, he's one of the best seekers in the world. I had no idea he was still in school." As they recrossed the entrance hall with the rest of Hogwarts, heading for the Great Hall, Harry saw Lee Jordan jumping up and down at the soles on the soles of his feet to get a better look at the back of Crumb's head. Several sixth-year girls were frantically searching their pockets as they watched. "Oh, I don't believe it. I haven't got a single quill on me. Do you think he'd sign my hat and lipstick?" "Really?" Hermione said loftily as they passed the girls, now squabbling over the lipstick. "I'm getting his autograph if I can," said Ron. "You haven't got a quill, have you, Harry?" "Nope, they're upstairs in my bag," said Harry. They walked over to the Gryffindor table and sat down. Ron took care to sit on the side facing the doorway because Crumb and his fellow Durmstrang students were gathered around it, apparently unsure where they should sit. The students from Beauxbatons had chosen seats at the Ravenclaw table. They were looking around the Great Hall with glum expressions on their face. Three of them were still clutching scarves and shawls around their heads. "It's not that cold," said Hermione defensively. "Why didn't they bring cloaks?" "Over here, come and sit over here," Ron hissed. "Over here, Hermione, budge up, make a space." "What?" "Too late," said Ron bitterly. Victor Crumb and his fellow Durmstrang students had settled themselves at the Slytherin table. Harry could see Malfoy, Crabbe, and Goyle looking very smug about this. As he watched, Malfoy bent forward to speak to Crumb. "Yeah, that's right. Smarm up to him, Malfoy," said Ron scathingly. "I bet Crumb can see right through him, though. Bet he gets people fawning over him all the time. Where do you reckon they're going to sleep? We could offer him a space in our dormitory, Harry. I wouldn't mind giving him my bed. I could sleep, Kip on a camp bed." Hermione snorted. "They look a lot happier than the Beauxbatons lot," said Harry. The Durmstrang students were pulling off their heavy furs and looking up at the starry black ceiling with an expression of interest. A couple of them were picking up golden plates and goblets and examining them, apparently impressed. Up at the staff table, Filch, the caretaker, was adding chairs. He was wearing his moldy old tailcoat in honor of the occasion. Harry was surprised to see that he added four chairs, two on either side of Dumbledore. "But there's only two extra people," Harry said. "Why is Filch putting out four chairs? Who else is coming?" "Eh?" said Ron vaguely. He was still staring avidly at Crumb. When all the students had entered the hall and settled down at their house tables, the staff entered, filing to the top table and taking their seats. Last in line were Professor Dumbledore, Professor Karkaroff, and Madame Maxime. When their headmistress appeared, the pupils from Beauxbatons leapt to their feet. A few of the Hogwarts students laughed. The Beauxbatons party appeared quite unembarrassed, however, and did not resume their seats until Madame Maxime had sat down Dumbledore's left-hand side. Dumbledore remained standing, and silence fell over the Great Hall. "Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, ghosts, and most particularly guests," said Dumbledore, beaming around at the foreign students. "I have great pleasure in welcoming all of you to Hogwarts. I hope and trust that your stay here will be both comfortable and enjoyable." One of the Beauxbatons girls, still clutching a muffler around her head, gave what was unmistakably a derisive laugh. "No one's making you stay here," Hermione whispered, bristling at her. "The tournament will be officially opened at the end of the feast," said Dumbledore. "I now invite you to eat, drink, and make yourselves at home." He sat down, and Harry saw Karkaroff lean forward at once and engage him in conversation. The plates in front of them filled with food as usual. The house elves in the kitchen seemed to have pulled out all the stops. There was a greater variety of dishes in front of them than Harry had ever seen, including several that were definitely foreign. "What's that?" said Ron, pointing at a large dish of some sort of shellfish stew that stood beside a large steak and kidney pudding. "Yeah. Bouillabaisse," said Hermione. "Bless you," said Ron. "It's French," said Hermione. "I had it on holiday last summer. It's very nice." I'll take your word for it, said Ron, helping himself to black pudding. Man, English food is so gross.
Mm-hmm.
God. The Great Hall seemed somehow much more crowded than usual, even though there were barely 20 additional students there. Perhaps it was the differently colored uniforms that stood out so clearly against the black of Hogwarts robes. Now that they had removed their furs, the Durmstrang students were revealed to be wearing robes of a deep blood red. Harry sidled into the Hagrid sidled into the hall through a door behind the staff table, 20 minutes after the start of the feast. He slid into his seat at the end and waved at Harry, Ron, and Hermione with a very heavily bandaged hand. "Scroot's doing all right, Hagrid?" Harry called. "Thriving," Hagrid called back heavily. "I'll bet they are," said Ron quietly. "Looks like they finally found a food they like, doesn't it?"
Hagrid's
fingers. At that moment, a voice said, "Excuse me, are you wanting the bouillabaisse?" It was a girl from Beaubaton who had laughed during Dumbledore's speech. She had finally removed her muffler. A long sheet of silvery blonde hair fell almost to her waist. She had large, deep blue eyes and very white, even teeth. Ron went purple. He stared up at her, opening his mouth to reply, but nothing came out except a faint gurgling noise. "You have it," said Harry, pushing the dish toward the girl. "You have finished with it?" "Yes," said Ron, breathlessly. "It was excellent." The girl picked up the dish and carried it carefully off to the Ravenclaw table. Ron was still goggling at the girl as though he had never seen one before. Harry started to laugh. The sound seemed to jog Ron back to his senses. "She's a Vila," he said hoarsely to Harry. "Of course she isn't," said Hermione tartly. "I don't see anyone else gaping at her like an idiot." But she wasn't entirely right about that. As the girl crossed the hall, many boys' heads turned, and some of them seemed to have become temporarily speechless, just like Ron. "I'm telling you, that's not a normal girl," said Ron, leaning sideways so he could keep a clear view of her. "They don't make them like that at Hogwarts."
Hermione.
"They make them okay at Hogwarts," said Harry without thinking. Cho seemed to happen to be sitting only a few places away from the girl with silvery hair. "When you've both put your eyes back in," said Hermione briskly, "you'll be able to see who's invited. Sorry, who's just arrived." She was pointing up at the staff table. The two remaining empty seats had been filled. Ludo Bagman was now sitting on Professor Karkaroff's other side, while Mr. Crouch, Percy's boss, was next to Madame Maxime. "What are they doing here?" said Harry in surprise. "They organized the Triwizard Tournament, didn't they?" said Hermione. "I suppose they wanted to be here to see it start." When the second course arrived before, they noticed a number of unfamiliar desserts, too. Ron examined an odd sort of pale blancmange closely, and then moved it carefully a few inches to his right so that it would be clearly visible from the Ravenclaw table. The girl who looked like a Vila appeared to have eaten enough, however, and did not come over and get it. Once the golden plates had been wiped clean, Dumbledore stood up again. A pleasant sort of tension seemed to fill the hall now. Harry felt a slight thrill of excitement, wondering what was coming. Several seats down from them, Fred and George were leaning forward, staring at Dumbledore with great concentration. "The moment has come," said Dumbledore, smiling around at a sea of upturned faces. "The Triwizard Tournament is about to start. I would like to say a few words of explanation before we bring in the casket." "The what?" Harry muttered. Ron shrugged. "Just to clarify the procedure that we'll be following this year. But first, let me introduce, for those who do not know them, Mr. Bartimus Crouch, head of the Department of International Magical Cooperation." There was a smattering of polite applause. "And Ludo Bagman, head of the Department of Magical Games and Sports." There was a much louder round of applause for Bagman than Crouch, perhaps because of his fame as a beater, or simply because he looked so much more likable. He acknowledged it with a jovial wave of his hand. Bartimius Crouch did not
Bartimus.
I pronounced it wrong initially. Bartimius Crouch.
Bartimus.
There's an I. Bartimius.
Bartimius.
Bartimius Crouch did not smile or wave when his name was announced. Remembering him in his neat suit at the Quidditch World Cup, Harry thought he looked strange in wizard robes. His toothbrush mustache and severe parting looked very odd next to Dumbledore's long white hair and beard. Mr. Bagman and Mr. Crouch have worked tirelessly over the last few months on the arrangements for the Triwizard Tournament, Dumbledore continued. And they will be joining myself, Professor Karkaroff, and Madame Maxine on the panel that will judge the champions' efforts. At the mention of the word champions, the attentiveness of the listening students seemed to sharpen. Perhaps Dumbledore had noticed their stiffness, for he smiled and said, "The casket, then, if you please, Mr. Filch." Filch, who had been lurking unnoticed in a far corner of the hall, now approached Dumbledore carrying a great wooden chest encrusted with jewels. It looked extremely old. A murmur of excited interest rose from the watching students. Dennis Creevy actually stood in his chair to see it properly, but, being so tiny, his head hardly rose above anyone else's. The instructions for the tasks the champions will face this year have already been examined by Mr. Crouch and Mr. Bagman, said Dumbledore, as Filch placed the chest carefully on the table before him, and they have made all the necessary arrangements for each challenge. There will be three tasks, spaced throughout the school year, and they will test the champions in many different ways. Their magical prowess, their daring, their powers of deduction, and of course, their ability to cope with danger. At this last word, the hall was filled with a silence so absolute that nobody seemed to be breathing. As you know, three champions compete in the tournament, Dumbledore went on calmly, one from each of the participating schools. They will be marked on how well they perform the tournament tasks, and the champion with the highest total after three tasks will win the Triwizard Cup. The champions will be chosen by an impartial selector, the Goblet of Fire. Dumbledore now took out his wand and tapped three times upon the top of the casket. The lid creaked slowly open. Dumbledore reached inside it and pulled out a large, roughly hewn wooden cup. Time out. Okay. So Dumbledore took out his wand and tapped three times on the top of the casket. The lid creaked slowly open. Dumbledore reached inside it and pulled out a large, roughly hewn wooden cup. It would have been entirely unremarkable had it not been full to the brim with dancing blue-white flames. Dumbledore closed the casket and placed the goblet carefully on top of it, where it would be clearly visible to everyone in the hall. Anybody wishing to submit themselves as a champion must write their name and school clearly on a slip of parchment and drop it into the goblet. Aspiring champions have 24 hours in which to put their names forward. Tomorrow night, Halloween, the goblet will return the names of the three it has judged most worthy to represent the schools. The goblet will be placed in the entrance hall tonight, where it will be freely accessible to all those wishing to compete. To ensure that no underage student yields to temptation, said Dumbledore, I will be drawing an age line around the Goblet of Fire once it has been placed in the entrance hall. Nobody under the age of 17 will be allowed to cross this line. Finally, I wish to impress upon any of you wishing to compete that this tournament is not to be entered into lightly. Once a champion has been selected by the Goblet of Fire, he or she is obliged to see the tournament through to the end. The placing of your name into the goblet constitutes a binding magical contract. There can be no change of heart once you have become champion. Please be very sure, then, that you're wholeheartedly prepared to play before you drop your name into a goblet. Now, I think it is time for bed. Good night to all of you. An age line, said Fred Weasley, his eyes glinting as they made their way across the hall to the doors into the entrance hall. Well, that should be fooled by an aging potion, shouldn't it? And once your name's in the goblet, you're laughing. I can't tell whether you're 17 or not. But I don't think anyone under 17 will stand a chance, said Hermione. We just haven't learned enough yet. Speak for yourself, said George shortly. You'll try and get in, won't you, Harry? Harry thought briefly of Dumbledore's insistence that nobody under 17 should submit their name. But then, the wonderful picture of him winning the Triwizard Tournament filled his mind again. He wondered how angry Dumbledore would be if someone younger than 17 did find a way to get over the age line. Maybe we should stop there. It's 4 o'clock. Where is he? Said Ron, who wasn't listening to a word of this conversation, but looking through the crowd to see what had become of Crumb. Dumbledore didn't say where the Durmstrang people are sleeping, did he? But this query was answered almost instantly. They were level with the Slytherin table, and Karkaroff had just bustled up to his students. Back to the ship, then, he was saying. Victor, how are you feeling? Did you get enough to eat? Should I send some mulled wines from the kitchens? Is that okay? Harry saw Crumb shake his head as he pulled his furs back on. Professor, I would like some wine, said one of the other Durmstrang students, hopefully. I wasn't offering it to you, Polkioff, said Karkaroff, his warm, paternal air vanishing an instant. I notice you have dribbled food from the front of your robes again. Disgusting boy. Karkaroff turned and led his students toward the door, reaching them at exactly the same moment as Harry, Ron, and Hermione. Harry stopped to let him walk first. Thank you, said Karkaroff carelessly, glancing back at him. And then Karkaroff froze. He turned his head back to Harry and stared at him as though he couldn't believe his eyes. Behind their headmaster, the students from Durmstrang came to a halt, too. Karkaroff's eyes slowly moved up Harry's face and fixated upon his star. The Durmstrang students were staring curiously at Harry, too, out of the corner of his eye. Harry saw comprehension dawn on a few of their faces. The boy with food all down his front nudged the girl next to him and pointed openly at Harry's forehead. Yeah, that's Harry Potter, said a growling voice behind them. Professor Karkaroff spun around. Mad-Eye Moody was standing there, leaning heavily on his staff, his magical eye glaring unblinkingly at the Durmstrang headmaster. The color drained from Karkaroff's face as Harry watched. A terrible look of mingled fury and fear came over him. You, he said, staring at Moody, as though unsure he was really seeing him. Me, said Moody grimly. And unless you've got anything to say to Potter, Karkaroff, you might want to move. You're blocking the doorway. It was true. Half the students in the hall were now waiting behind them, looking over one's shoulders to see what was causing the holdup. Without another word, Professor Karkaroff swept his students away with him. Moody watched him until he was out of sight, his magical eye fixated upon his back, a look of intense dislike upon his mutilated face. And for listening to this later, boo, I love you so much. You're very cute. And your butt is super cute. I love you, kittens. Sleep well. Good night.